Well, the scoreboard said I lost today, but what the scoreboard doesn't say is what it is I have found.
Welcome back to the Tennis Connected Studios for December 21st, 2018. I'm Nima Naderi alongside Parsa Sammy, and we're here today to review the tennis season as well as look forward to the 2019 season. This week's podcast is brought to you by Grand Slam Tennis Tours. Make sure to hit them up for next year's Grand Slam events in Australia, France, London, and New York. Let's introduce our co-host for this week. Parsa, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing very well. Back after a hiatus.
Yes, we've both been tied up. I was in the Caribbean for a greater part of the fall season, being tournament director for some events down there, some ITFs. I was busy with that. And then we've just been, the holiday season, everything's got us tied up. But we're back again to conclude the year. I think this is the latest podcast we've ever done. I don't think we've ever
really?
I don't think we've ever rocked anything this close to Christmas. So it's going to be a special one for everybody. Looking forward to it. And we'll see how it goes.
Definitely a sincere happy holidays to all the our listeners and to the tennis world in general. It's an exciting time. Why? Because Australia's around the corner and I can't wait. I love that tournament.
And Parsa, the amazing thing is that the Australian Open is 3 weeks away. And
great.
It's amazing,
thank
right?
God.
Yeah, it's just this very interesting dynamic always where it's December 21st, so we're still in 2018. You still got to go through Christmas and Boxing Day and New Year's Eve and all of this stuff. And then January 13th, the Australian Open starts. And it's like, it's nothing. Like, it's just coming right up, right? And it's just no off season. It's amazing. Kind of enjoyed the downtime a little bit this year. Gearing up because obviously I had a really busy fall, so I'm kind of chilling and just taking my time. And all the pros are grinding away in Bradenton and Europe and all over the place.
Have you found it on that note? Have you found it interesting? Because I have. I've been watching a lot of Instagram clips of all the different players prepping. Mm-hmm. I don't know if anyone else out there has been, but it's been actually. I know Instagram's been around for a while, but
yeah.
The players are being more interactive. I feel like there's a lot of clips going up on what people are doing, on how they're working, all the way from like the college guys who are getting ready for their preseason to the pro guys. I found it very interesting on how each player is working on different things and what they're doing in order to prep for 2019. So I don't know. What did you think about that?
Yeah, I think, with the advent of social media, it's just taking everything to the next level. It's real time. Instagram is just, you have just the posts, you have Instagram Live, you have the video now where you can put, the TV thing where you can put even longer clips on. And it's just, you just take everything to the next level. Team just has a YouTube channel now, and Tsitsipas, we know, is heavily into that. And, all of these guys, Nadal's been putting up some stuff, and Osaka and Sabalenka and, Azarenka, everybody's been going pretty crazy. So yeah, you're in touch. You know what they're doing.
Yeah, 100%.
You know where they are, what they're eating, Bouchard's in Hawaii playing an exhibition. She was in Nectar Cup. She was all, and it's just like, it's definitely very much in touch, and so it's great. I mean, you don't feel like you're very distant from the action, and I'm sure as the season kicks off, we'll get even more of that. So anyways, Parsa, so let's get right into it, man. Let's review the year. So we go back to Australia, where we're going to again quickly in a few weeks, but we had Roger Federer winning another Grand Slam, winning, I think, his sixth Australian Open, which was fantastic. And then we had Wozniacki defeating Halep, which was a very devastating loss for Halep and a very inspiring and I mean, you know, memorable win for Wozniacki. So what were your lasting impressions from that event? I mean, obviously we had Federer once again defending his title. He's going to be going back trying to three-peat, which is going to be crucial for him, I think, for the whole year, for next year. But, you know, just a couple quick thoughts on you know, Oz and what you thought of that tournament.
I mean, what an inspiring way to start 2018.
Yes.
You know, you've got two players in Wozniacki and Federer who were sort of written off. I mean, definitely Wozniacki. No one ever thought, you know, she was always under that umbrella with Halep of them. And, you know, she came through and came through in a big way. I believe she saved match points in the first round, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
Is that right, Nima?
Yeah,
second
yeah.
round? One of those two rounds.
Exactly.
She was down, right? Her back was completely against the wall. She was about to book her flight home. And instead, she turns around 2 weeks later and is holding the trophy, which is an incredible feat in itself. And I think that's happened a couple of years in a row on the women's side, which is interesting at that. So let's see who this year is going to be down match points, because that's who's probably going to win. But on the men's side, you know, Federer is the ageless, timeless wonder, although I feel like he's slowed down as the year has gone down. So, you know, sure. gone on. So he's starting to show a little bit of aging, whether it's... you know, the training is lessened, or the family obligations are more, or whatever it is. Australia could potentially have been his last Grand Slam he ever won. And it was a heroic effort, an effort that no one really knew how to handle, this aggressive style, this relentless pursuit of taking the ball early and pushing the opponents around the court, serving tremendously well, and playing clutch points, to be honest with you. That's ultimately how it goes on, and he deserved the title. He won it. I don't think it's going to be so easy in 2019, Nima. I think we've got a Djokovic full back. I think we're going to get all the cast of characters back, and I think it's going to be very, very tricky. You know, I think he can still win a slam, but I think he still requires only one of the big dogs in his way. I think he can beat one of the big dogs, but if he has to beat two or three of them, I don't think it's happening.
Yeah, and I think the guy he really has to worry about is Djokovic. I think that's the main guy. If he can stay away from him, and if somebody else can somehow knock him out, then I think he's got a chance. But, I mean, I think he can beat even Zverev in a Grand Slam still. I think he can beat Nadal, just because Nadal hasn't played really since the summer. I mean, he played Canada, he won it, he played U.S. Open, he withdrew at the semis, and he hasn't played since. So, and we know how, but he's looking, Rafa's looking good, man. I was looking at him hitting some shots in Mallorca. He's smashing the ball, so he's looking really good. But yeah, so we'll see how that transpires, but I definitely don't think that Federer's going to win the Australian Open. But we'll get to that bridge when we cross it in a few weeks. Yeah, so that's how I basically, I mean, that was a good wrap-up of Australia. Then we kind of moved into that, again, kind of like early off season in February, where not a lot of things are happening. But then Federer recaptured the number one ranking in Rotterdam. He had that hot streak, and then he made the finals of Indian Wells, and he was like 17-1 before Delpo beat him. I think that was a very important moment for him, because I think if he had won Indian Wells, that might have gave him a little bit of a different momentum. But he lost that match, then he lost to Kokkinakis, then he didn't play the clay, came back and he won that small tournament in Stuttgart. He lost to Chorich and Halle, then Wimbledon he lost to Anderson, didn't play Canada.
Nima, I just want to stop you for a second, because you actually, everyone can go back to the podcast after Indian Wells, you noted that.
Yeah.
You were all over him. You were like, I don't know, that was a strange match. I didn't like the way that unfolded, and it totally, he was on the serious decline from there. And it's been progressive, unfortunately. There hasn't been a stop to the slide. There's been blips of good, but it's been like, you know, one of these, like, it's trending down, you know, kind of like the stock exchange in the United States right now. It's fluttering down. So, hopefully Federer and the stock exchange both pick back up in 2019.
I know, man, that's affecting me over here too. So I'll tell you, and it was interesting because, you know, you look at these guys and it's such a fragile thing, because you look at Federer, and as great as he is, right, he hasn't really done that much since March. I mean, for the most part, he hasn't been really killing it, right? And then if we talk about Djokovic, I mean, he was almost going to retire, man, after Miami. He was getting torched by Taro Daniel and Benoit Paire, earlier, and he was like, "What am I doing out here, man?" And then he lost to Cicinato at the French, and then he just somehow regrouped, won Wimbledon, U.S., and then rolled. And it's these guys are not used to that. And now this is the thing. And Federer's 30.
Somehow, I'm going to say Marian Vida has a little bit of a important role in there. By the way. Yeah.
And it's like, you know, you look at how fragile these guys' mentalities are, even at the highest level. But Federer's 37, done so much, 4 kids, you know, like, he just loves it. That's why he keeps doing it, right? And he's competitive and he wants to do well. But it's hard at this point now if he's going to start, if he starts losing second round, third round, first round, maybe quarters, then he's kind of like, he wants to be in the mix. You know what I mean? He wants to be at the tail end of these events. I think if he loses before the quarters of Australian Open, that's going to be a big problem, because he'll probably play one tournament in February, probably Indian Wells, Miami, and then he's off again. I don't think he's going to play the clay. If he plays the clay, you know he's going to be almost done, because that's not a strategically good move. I don't care if it's good for the fans and everything. Obviously it is, but it's not good for his tennis. He again should not play the clay. If he does, you know that's kind of like he's just saying goodbye. Now, that doesn't mean that I think he's going to wrap it up this year, because 100% he has to play the Olympics next year for his Uniqlo deal, because that's part of his whole thing, that he's got to play and then he can wrap it up, and then he'll still get that $30 million a year, because they need him active for that tournament, for the promotion and the billboards and all of that stuff in Tokyo, which is just absolutely, you know, the grandest stage of sports. So he's definitely going to play the Olympics next year. Sorry, technically 2 years in 2020. And then I think that's going to be his swan song and he's going to wrap it up. But I think that's pretty much
the golden age of 4-0, baby.
Yeah. And I think that's, you know, that's how we saw Fed's year pretty much. Moving on to the clay, then it was Rafa time. He came in and he swooped up and he just smoked through everybody. That was, I mean, it was amazing.
Aren't you shocked by that revelation, Nima, in the last 14 years or whatever? It's always Rafa's time.
Yeah, and now quickly, just if you were going to early guess this, do you think he rolls the clay season again in 19? If you were going to guess right now. So it's going to be, pretty much. And then I think we look at it from the women's side. It was nice to see Halep finally win a major. That was huge for her, I think. Really nice to see. I mean, she's obviously a very hard worker, talented player. See what she does next year. I think she's got her work cut out for her just to solidify her dominance, because you have a couple bigger, stronger, younger players coming up like Osaka and Sabalenka, who I think are going to be nipping at her heels. You got Serena, who's looking much fitter, by the way. She looks like she's lost a little bit of weight. She's really coming back, and she's going to do some damage maybe next year. But she's aging, too. She's going to be, 37, 38 next year. So we'll see how that rolls down. And for me, I mean, the French was the French. I mean, you know, just more history. Number 11 for Nadal, number 1 for Halep. That was pretty much what the story there was. And then as we moved to Wimbledon, we saw Kerber win her third major. Another disappointing loss for Serena in a Grand Slam final. Djokovic came back. I mean, that match with Nadal was basically almost a match of the year. That was an incredible match. I mean, it was over 2 days. The guys were just playing lights-out tennis. And so any lasting memories from Wimbledon, I think for me, it's that Federer losing to Anderson. And then Nadal losing to Djokovic, because if he had won that, he probably would have won Wimbledon. And then he sets himself up for a situation. I mean, then you don't know what's going to happen. Then he probably ends number one in the year, right? Because he would have had two slams, and Djokovic would only have won. I don't know. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, but also I think part of the Djokovic recovering and being number one was that he had nothing to defend. I mean, ultimately, there was nothing to go for.
Yes.
It would have been close, that's for sure. It would have made a more competitive year-end, I think, if Nadal would have been able to take Wimbledon. You can point to that match for Djokovic that turned things around. He was unwilling to relent, and I think that showed him a lot for himself. And and clearly carried him through the rest of the year.
Yeah, I agree. And Kerber again showed her craftiness. What an amazing turnaround she had with such a disappointing 2017. to become then again super relevant this year, and then just come back and use her leftiness and her a little bit of an improved serve. I mean, ground strokes and angles have always been on point, and then to beat Serena, which is never an easy task on the grass. And yeah, I mean, it was nice to see from her. We'll see what she does next year, because she might then have an off year next year. We don't know. And then Serena for me is a question mark. How do you think she's going to do? I mean, we've got to talk about her because she's the most dominating women's player ever, pretty much. I mean, do you think she wins a major next year?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be her year, actually.
Okay, nice.
I think she's going to come back with a roar, and I'm going to put it out there and I'm going to say she's going to win two. How about that?
Yeah, I wouldn't. I can't.
You know, she could go even three, because I think that there's a lot to prove. And when you put Serena in these sort of positions, she always historically has come through. Her passion is strong. She knows that the time is of the essence. And you know, there is an end date near. And, you know, let's say she wants to have a second kid. You know, that's pretty much going to be the end of her career. So I think the way this is all headed is that this is going to be the last chapter of her career. Not this particular year, but I think the next couple years is going to be the last chapter, the final chapter.
Mm-hmm.
And I think she's going to be trying to put that slam number out of reach. And that's ultimately what it comes down to.
Yeah. I mean, I think if you can get to 25, then you're, you know, 24, 25, you're... She wants to get to 25 for sure. I think that's the magic number for her. So we'll see. It would be great to see. I mean, she garners a lot of attention, and you know, I mean, we haven't seen her since that debacle at the U.S. Open, right? So we haven't that controversial ending there, which we obviously spoke in depth about on a few podcasts earlier this year. So we'll see how that transpires. And then as we move then to the hard court season, we had Nadal winning in my backyard here in Toronto. We had Djokovic defeating Federer in an, I guess, okay final in Cincy. I mean, nothing really too crazy. And then at the U.S. Open, we had Osaka, I mean, playing amazing, winning her maiden Grand Slam title, which was a little bit overshadowed. I think she's handled it still really, really well. Very down to earth, and, you know, still her quirky self and on social media and everything, and she's just taking it all in, see how she does next year. And then obviously we had Djokovic defeating Delpo in the finals, which was nice to see Delpo continuing to increase, you know, from going quarters, semis, then finals this year in the last few years at the U.S. Open, his favorite tournament. How did you rate that? I mean, obviously I was there. We watched that tournament. How did you rate, you know, the U.S. Open overall as an event?
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was a... I mean, we spoke about it. I think you thought it was a really good tournament, right?
Yeah, there was. I mean, the Khachanov Nadal match was great. The team Nadal match was amazing. We had, I mean, the joke. There was a lot of good tennis, right? Then we had the heat.
There was a
that
lot
crazy
of excitement. You know, on the outside there was excitement. There was excitement on the inside. The women's draw was exciting. The men's draw was exciting. It had started slow and just finished, you know, just unbelievably on a high. I felt like, and then that whole, the women's final was all controversial, and it was very good drama, let me tell you.
I think, you know, for me, man, as an overall, men's tennis, more than anything, in my opinion, needs obviously another guy to really, I mean, like Zverev proved some stuff, obviously, by winning in London, beat Djokovic and Federer, but still, he's got to do something in a major, even though, because we're grading at the highest level, even though he's like 20-21, but for me, one of the most like important things in men's tennis is for an American player to really come up and do something. Like, you need a top 10, serious top 10 player. Not like Jack Sock coming in and then winning six matches this year. And then, you know, TFO's athletic and Taylor Fritz is this good-looking California guy, but he's not really doing much or whatever. You need a guy to really come in and do some damage, because it's important. I mean, obviously, yeah, Isner had a great career, but he's, you know, 33, and he's not going to really, I think, do much this year. He's got a lot of points to defend, and it's, you know, he's a big body, and it's not easy for him to do what he's got to do, even though you got to take your hats off to him. He did amazing in 2018, but for me, I think you need a U.S. player to really do some damage. I mean, on the women's side, you have a lot of great players coming up. You have, like I said, Osaka, Sabalenka. You still have Serena as one of the most, you know, sought after players, and everybody knows who she is and follows her all around the world. So I think from an American standpoint, States is doing really well on the WTA side, but on the ATP side, there's still a lot of work to do. Even, I'm saying that as a Canadian, even if Shapovalov becomes top 10 at the end of the year next year, I mean, he's a Canadian. It's still, the market is substantially smaller than the States. It's not even close. So you need somebody to really come in and do something there.
Yeah. I almost disagree with you in that we do need an American in there, but I think the American, in the part I disagree with, is I think Isner is going to continue to improve, actually. I'm going to tell you exactly why.
Okay.
A big server like that, he's not going to slow down. That server is not going to slow down until he's, you know, 40 years old. So
yeah.
What is going to slow down is his body. Now think about this, Nima. So if his body and movement is slowing down, then he's going to get more aggressive, which is really the way he should be playing anyway.
Yes.
So I think things will continue to actually improve for him. But on that token, I don't think that's the American that we want consistently in
exactly.
the top 10. Because
with all due
boring.
Respect. Yeah, yeah.
So and I'm not sure how marketable he is, you know. And so in that way, I think we're heading into a weird position here with U.S. tennis, is that I think our best player is going to be Isner, and I think he's going to be the best player for the next 3 years or so. And
wow.
I think he will be consistently in the top 12 or so in the world. And I'm pretty sure it's going to happen, because one thing he has proven is that he's a competitor. There's no doubt about that.
Yes.
The other thing that he proved to me this year, he had great results, but they weren't great results, if that makes any sense to anyone out there. But meaning, The statistics looked nice. He beat this number, whatever player in the world, and it was like a big win in a big spot. Great. Then, but he wasn't playing out of his mind type of tennis to have those results. He was playing his normal game, but he's more refined. He knows tactically what he has to do a little bit better. He's volleying a little bit better.
Yeah.
He's being a little bit more aggressive, and I think that trend is going to continue because age is going to take his legs away, you know. And take the example of Ivo Karlovic. I think they're very, very similar, except Karlovic can't hit a ground stroke, and he's gotten better. And as he's aged, Karlovic, he's learned to tactically play to his style to the absolute max, and I think that's what we're seeing with Isner last year. And I think it's going to continue. I think at 33, I think he's going to be good. At 34, 35, I think he's still going to be good. At 36, I think he's still going to be good, of course, barring injury. And then once he really slows down, then I think we'll see what we've seen with Karlovic. Karlovic got a pretty major injury, and then we sort of haven't heard from him again. So even though he still comes back for a one-off match, and he's still just impossible to play against and can beat anybody at any given day. So I think that's what we're going to get from American tennis. And I think it's going to be tough. I think that the crop of players... If anybody, I sort of like TFO, but there's a but there, you know, and he continues to improve, you know. I think winning and getting to this level with these guys are at right now, it's a daunting task for any youngster. And you know, when it comes to Zverev, for example, it's still a best of three match, you know. These guys now, the cast of characters growing up, we play like super tiebreakers in the third set. It's like a disaster.
Yeah.
These guys can't concentrate for five sets. I mean, give me a break. They go through these roller coasters greater than they have in the past. And, you know, I'm not sure that the guys right now in these generations can handle it. They need a ton of Grand Slam matches, a ton of best of five matches until they find that rhythm and they change their habits. And we'll see what kind of work is being done. And Zverev, I think, eventually will break through. Eventually he'll play the best of fives better.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I can't tell you a number until he gets to that point where he's going to get over the hump and continue to find that rhythm and be able to advance deep into these slams, which is what his next step is.
Okay. And now, Parsa, as we move to our last 3 points here, first one I want to talk about is, so I always do this prediction article for next year. So I predicted the 2019 top 10 for the ATP. So I'm going to read it off to you. You tell me if you know what you think. So I have Djokovic finishing number one next year. I got Zverev finishing number two. I got Nadal finishing number three. I got Delpo finishing number four. I got Team at 5. I got Federer at 6. So he's dropping. I got Cilic still maintaining, you know, pretty good form at 7. I got Khachanov sneaking into the top 10 at 8. Really liked what I saw from him this fall. He's just a big, very durable, strong guy. Even though I think that forehand grip in his hip is going to give him some problems as he gets older. And then you got Chorich at 9. Again, another guy who works very hard. Not going to, I think, be at the top, but he's going to definitely good enough for 8 to 10 range. And then I think Anderson's going to drop a bit because he's got a lot of points to defend, especially at Wimbledon. Finishes, rounds out the top 10. And then I got 3 players to watch for next year. Daniel Medvedev, think he's a very solid, underrated, like not underrated, he's not going to get a lot of fanfare, but the guy is just like a Gumby arm, tall guy, good serve, good groundies. I think Yoshita Nishioka, Japanese guy, very small, but he's like a firefly out there, watch out for him. And then I think Riley Opelka, man, we talked about American tennis, and you talked about Isner. Well, this is Isner 2.0 with even better ground strokes. Arguably, maybe not as good of a serve, but it's a heck of a good serve still at 6'10", 6'11", whatever the guy is. He just broke into the top 100 after winning a couple challengers to finish off the year. So he's into Australia, and it's just going to be points galore from here on in for him. So, you know, what do you think about that as an overall?
I mean, I think pretty fair. There's a few guys, you know, there's some old-timers in there, Wawrinka, that we haven't spoken of. What about Tsitsipas on clay? Is he going to have a tremendous year and break in? Is Kyle Edmund and his massive forehand going to do something? Is Borna Koric going to take on what he's learned from 2018 and bring it into 2019? What about Dimitrov? Baby Fed. You've totally eliminated that guy.
And who's got Andre Agassi in his corner now?
Yeah, and your countryman, Milos Raonic. You know, you've written him off. What about Goffin? That guy was top 5 in the world just a short bit a while ago. And then, you know, there's Shapovalov. And you keep going down the list here. Kyrgios, what about that guy?
Did you see
him riding that bike? that boy's getting ready. You know, you got TFO inside the top 40 now. You know that this guy is growing, so it's going to be a very. I hope we have everybody healthy, because who knows what's going to happen, and it's going to be so competitive that I think it's going to push tennis even to the next level, beyond that level, Nima. Yeah. Whatever levels you exist at, it's going to be beyond world level. That's where that is.
Yeah,
and I think it's anybody's guess right now. I think probably the top 3 is the way to go, and I'm gonna go with my top 3. And I'm gonna go with Rafael Nadal as the number 1 player in the world.
Wow!
Djokovic.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm gonna tell you why with Rafa. This dude, man, I think he's gonna win Australia first of all. I really do. What he's historically, listen to what he's historically proven to us. And this is not, there's no statistics in front of me, but when he comes off of injury and he has a little bit of time to regain a rhythm, which he's going to have before Australia, the guy is like lights out. When he's fresh, there's just nobody. He has to be a little bit banged up for him to start to fade a little bit. And then usually the same rhythm goes on with him. And I think he's coming off of a stretch where he's been resting and fishing and doing all that kind of stuff.
For sure.
And then the dude gets fresh, and he's just a tough out. I mean, he's a very hard guy to break down. And I think we're going to need to see, for Djokovic to beat him in Australia, we're going to need to see Djokovic step to that level where he starts to close his eyes and starts to hit the lines. And we haven't seen that. What we saw from Djokovic is that he was the best of the crop at the end of 2018.
Yeah.
Did we see a dominance taking other guys who are peaking and destroy them as well? I didn't see that. Mm-hmm. So that's where my question mark is. I think that leaves the door open for Nadal. That's why I've got Nadal there. However, I do have Djokovic at number 2.
Yeah.
And what I'm going to have at number 3, I think, will surprise people. And the reason that I think it will surprise people is that because there's an off chance that this guy may figure it all out. And I'm going to go with Dominic Thiem.
Yes.
And I'm going to tell you why. Team for me suffered on the faster courts, and I think he's figuring it out. So I think he's going to have a decent clay court season because he's just better on clay than he is on any other surface. But I think he's going to gain points in other places, and I think he's going to have one of those the former women number one type of seasons where he has a nice, consistent, strong year where he's going to finish, you know, 81-8, something like there, 10, 11, whatever it is. He's going to win 6 tournaments, but not necessarily Grand Slam tournaments, and he's just going to always be in that conversation.
Yeah.
So I think that's going to be my top three there. I'm not going to bother with the rest because it's impossible. I think there literally could be from 4 to 20, I think, and you can just mash them all together.
Okay.
I think Anderson will continue too. I think this is the era of the big guys. Sure. I think Cilic will be in the conversation. I think Del Potro will be in the conversation. I think Zverev will be in the conversation. These are bigger, stronger guys that they take it to you. You know, the serving and the ability to mature in the brain and to play those big points a certain way and have defined tactics going into big moments, I think, is ultimately the separator between winning and losing at the final levels at the slams and, mm-hmm. and the big matches and the big stages. And I think that's what we're seeing. This is the evolution. I think that's where we're at.
Yeah, I think, I mean, for you to say Nadal's going to finish number one, so this is the thing, and I've talked about this in length on Twitter and some other podcasts and with other people. So a couple things, Barca. The guy played, first of all, he was like, 45-4 this year? Something like that. He won like 5 titles. He played 9 tournaments, and he finished number 2 with this close to finishing number 1, okay? Which is amazing. I don't care if he won tournaments on clay, whatever. You know what I mean? He still won, you know, Canada. He played really well this year, I think. So that's the first thing. The thing for me, though, is he hasn't won Australia in 9 years. So that's the 9 or 10 years. So I think it's always been a tough tournament for him. But definitely, I mean, if he's fresh, he can do some damage. And I think he's going to play it smart. He's going to play less, which is what he definitely should do, and then just roll the clay again. And then he's got to, you know, do something a little bit during the summer. Wimbledon, he played really well. I mean, he was, again, this close to winning Wimbledon. It's not a joke. I mean, he's serving better. I think the Moya acquisition, you know, even though, you know, I'm a big Moya guy, he was amazing still for the last couple of years. He's in a good place. He's chill right now, and he's enjoying himself, and he knows what he needs to do to peak and to do well. Team, I love that one too. I have him at 5. I think he's really ready to go to the next level because he's just stronger than a lot of guys. He's a very durable guy. And he's got he played well at the U.S. Open. And if the U.S. Open continues to be at this court speed next year, why wouldn't he do well? I mean, he almost beat Nadal. And if he had beaten Nadal, I think he would have had a decent chance against Del Potro. You know what I'm saying? Because he can hit the ball big too. And he almost beat Del Potro the year before, if you remember, in that crazy match where it just blew the roof off of the grandstand. I could hear it from the media center, right? So. I mean, yeah, so I think I really like that stuff. Just wanted to share a quick story with everybody here before we just do one more thing and then we wrap it up. So I was, as you know, Parse, I was doing, you know, these 4 events in the Caribbean. And then so one of the guys that we had come down for the XOs in Anguilla and Antigua was Mark Philippoussis. So Mark came down, spent about 4 or 5 days with them a lot. I was with them, like, you know, at the airport for 4 or 5 hours on a layover in St. Martin, getting to Antigua. And we're just talking about Agassi and Dimitrov and, you know, Sakari and Kokkinakis, amazing stories. And he had one really good thing to say about, you know, about Dimitrov and his game. And he was saying, because, you know, he's with Agassi now, and he was just talking about the dynamics of just players in general. And he said the biggest problem with all these guys is nobody plays really close to the baseline like Djokovic does, right? And then so they give up so much court speed, and you got a guy like Dimitrov who's so far back and just using his athleticism to get everything going. And that's why he's suffering, man. You got to get closer to the baseline. And that's what Federer did a couple of years ago with Edberg. He committed to that, to playing more aggressive. Took him a little bit of time, but then look at what happened. Came back, he won a couple of Australias, Wimbledon. I mean, the guy's 21 Grand Slams, right? And that's what you need to do nowadays, because then otherwise what it becomes is just who's better at the baseline and is going to win that one more point. And who's better at that? Djokovic, Nadal. And that's why they're doing so good, right? So, and I mean, and Philippoussis, he had some stuff to say about Kyrgios. I'm not going to share everything because it's kind of confidential. But the whole point is that it's like really good insight. And I just want to know, because obviously you're still really much involved in the coaching realm as well as in the high performance aspect of it. What do you think about generally the men's side and players not get, like a guy like Dimitrov? I know you've had some choice words about him in the past. Still a super talented guy who's been struggling. And, you know, he's digging the well. He's got Agassi now, who's going to go down to Australia with him. Do you think, realistically, that's going to do anything? Because he has the talent. Does he have what it takes? Serb, for me, is still a big problem with him. Just generally, talk a little bit about Grigor, and then talk about, the aspect of hugging that baseline and then making it happen before we wrap it up for this week.
Yeah, I mean, Grigor-wise, with Agassi, I do think it's one of those things. Djokovic wasn't really willing, to listen to what Agassi had to say. It's, will Dimitrov buy in? That's ultimately what it comes down to there. Dimitrov has historically not bought in and has sort of, he's been with Valverde, which, is he still in his camp?
Yes, absolutely.
He's still there. I think Valverde, he plays that game of taking some and giving some and sort of working with what he has. Agassi's going to come in with, this is how you should be playing, and this is what I think. And, I'm not sure that pairing is going to be a good one. I think that Agassi will be getting him on top of the baseline more. He'll be explaining his dad's math to Grigor. And saying, like, hey, my dad was a casino guy. He figured out that if you take distance away, that the ball actually travels to the court faster. You have the skill set to do it. You should be playing like this. Which then brings me to the second thing. And the second thing is, what's the benefit of playing on top of the baseline or closer to the baseline? And it's pretty simple. I actually explain to my students all the time, and I have a lot of my students playing like this, and that's why I think they're very successful in an age where, where I live, you're limited indoor court time, and you can't train, 4 or 5 hours a day like the kids in Florida. Then how come all my players are, 98% of the time beat the Florida, Texas, California guys? And it's simply because, and the feedback I get from colleges and college coaches is all my players really understand the court really well. And that's simply because I have them also using the up parts and cutting angles off of the court. Mm-hmm. And what that does is it enables you, especially as you get older in men's tennis, is it enables you to widen the court. So when you widen the court and you hit harder angles with spin and you get the guy off the court or the girl off the court, you now have a safer, high-risk, flatter ball that can go through the court once you open the court up. So is it the way to play? Absolutely. Here's the caveat. When we're playing indoors, we've got, I think, 12 feet behind the baseline, not a ton of space.
Yeah.
So it works. You go to a stadium court, and you're getting these super athletic dudes, and there's 30 feet back there. So now you can angle all you want, but these guys are able to actually get into the court. So you need one more thing on the men's tour, and that is you got to be able to volley. And so you need to open the angle of the court. You need to hit the crap out of the ball to the open court, and you need to follow it up and be able to hit a half volley, a drop volley, an angle volley, from all different sorts of positions in order to be successful. And if there's a player that can make that transition, mm-hmm. they're going to be very successful. Can Grigor do it?
I don't think so. I don't think so, personally.
I think he'll struggle a little bit, and then I think he'll probably revert back to what he's comfortable doing.
Yeah, he's definitely.
I don't see him as a champion, and no. I think a champion like Federer is able to make that transition.
Sure.
I think you mentioned Nadal as the grind, but he's changed his court position too, Neymar. He's absolutely actually using the angles better than he ever has.
For sure.
He used to use it with spin. Now he's actually, bringing the ball down above the net. He's not as high anymore, and now he's hitting the ball through the court more using those angles.
Yes.
I think that's where the trend of the game has been going anyway. And, look at these big guys. The big guys with the big wingspan, they can take the ball a bit earlier, and they can do exactly that. So they hit their serve off the court, they hit to the open court, Isner's going to follow through, which goes back to my Isner point earlier in the podcast.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's where the game is trending. you know, and you look at a guy like look at the young crop of Grindr coming up as Demonure from Australia.
Love that
I
guy.
Think, I love the guy. Yeah. I love the fight, but he's a dying breed. I almost feel like.
Yes.
Like he's got to grind so hard. He's got to get bigger. He's got to get stronger. I think percentage wise, I think he'll climb the rankings. Will he be one in the world though? I don't know. I don't know if we're going to get a one in the world anymore. That's going to be that style of play.
Yeah, yeah.
I think you're going to have the well-rounded guy now, who's coming. The guy who's willing to attack inside the court. The guy who's willing to sit back a little bit more when the time is right. And tactically, I think it's going to be even more important. And Nima, please, just one more thing.
Yeah.
Please, let's not do this coaching thing on the court. I can't. If coaching goes into the pro game, I don't know, man. You're taking the greatest thing about tennis, and I'm a coach, and egotistical, yes, me, yeah, I want to be the difference in the match. I don't want to be the difference in the match. That's why I love coaching tennis. It's like it's you, the player, that has to go out there and figure it out. And you know, is it entertaining to see some woman bitching at her coach? I guess, I don't know. But it's a lot more entertaining for me to see a player make an adjustment and then the other player have to make an adjustment to that adjustment. And knowing that, I wish the announcers would explain that to the general public a little bit more, because I think it's super interesting into the inside of the tactics that are being played.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I don't like that. I want the players. I want it to be on the players. That's my final parting thought for 2018.
Mm-hmm.
Let's keep it the way it is. I love it. You know, and I don't think coaching brings a greater I don't think the quality is going to improve necessarily. I think you're just going to get, you know, emotional wannabes who can't have that emotional EQ be very high through the roof. And you're just going to get mid-range guys who are all fiery. And then the coach can be like, hey, man, you need to keep the ball in the court. And the guy's going to go, oh, yeah, that's right. You know, and all of a sudden, you know, because he's more athletic, like let's say like a Kyrgios, if you ever listen to anyone. You know, the guy's unstoppable. Let's watch Kyrgios. This is entertaining. Do you think Kyrgios is entertaining? I mean, you don't know what the hell you're going to get, but I think he's going to get it at some point. You know,
for sure.
You know, and it's going to be the greatest story ever. You know, this guy. You know, he came from basketball and this and that and all he does, and he didn't commit himself, and now he's riding a bike like 500 miles an hour.
Instagram. You saw that.
And
yeah.
Like he's figuring it out, and he's doing it, and then he goes and wins something. You know how. When he's raising the trophy eventually at a Grand Slam, what his face is going to look like, it's going to be disbelief. That makes me sweaty palms right now.
Yeah.
You know, that's what is beautiful about tennis is the journey, is how you get to that point where you can't believe it.
Mm-hmm.
Every Grand Slam that you see, I don't care if it's Federer who's been there 20 times, he holds the thing and he's like, I can't believe I'm holding this thing right now.
Yeah.
And I feel like you start to tarnish that a little bit, but that's my parting thoughts, guys. Everybody, happy new year from me. Let's get the tennis to the next level. If we can get guys healthy, I promise the level will continue to rise by itself. And this sport is a beautiful sport. And beautiful things are happening. And let's continue that trend.
Yeah. No, very, very extremely well said. So, Parsif, last small point, just want to quickly talk about, and then we're done for this week. So, all of the Grand Slams now have different final set endings, right? I think Australia, they just said today, Craig Tilley said that, I think it's what, a 10-point tiebreak at 6-all, right? French, they just keep going by two games. I think it's Wimbledon is at 12-all in the fifth set, and then US Open's a tiebreaker in the fifth set. Question for you, before we're done for this week, is who's got it right? Does everybody have it right? And do you like that all four are different?
What a question. This is the first I'm hearing of a super tiebreak in the at 6-all, you said?
Yeah, I believe so. I believe so, yeah.
I actually like that.
Yeah.
I actually like it because what's exciting, so all these juniors here play these 10-point tiebreaks. I mean, I hate it from a coaching standpoint,
but if you're
at the end of five sets, it's fine.
Yeah.
It's a very frantic, momentum-swinging tiebreak. Someone can go up 6-2 and can lose, and it's very interesting. Where 6-2 in a 7-point tiebreak is finished, you can play a few bad points. this is like the super tiebreak gives the ebbs and flows of a match and can be a continuation. I think we've seen at Labor Cup.
Yeah.
Was very exciting, the super tie breaks. Now, those were coming in replacement of a third set. If it's at the end of five, I think it's a beautiful thing.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's at the end of a three-set women's match, I think it would be a beautiful thing. So I think I think they've got it right, believe it or not. I think the U.S. Open is too short. I think that, like I said, the 10-point tiebreak, watching it over the years, it's lots of ebbs and flows. And inside the tiebreak itself, I think it can lend to, if the match is ebbs and flows, I think the tiebreak will continue to be ebbs and flows, where a 7-point tiebreak, I think, will favor the person who has the greater momentum. 10 points allows you to change that momentum and shift it. And I think that's exciting. And, I think that's the way to go. The win by two games is boring. I find it boring. No one has the time anymore to sit there and watch an entire match like that unless you're at the stadium. Wimbledon, they did it because the final was such garbage this year. I mean, that's why that got implemented. But I wouldn't mind seeing a 10-point tiebreak there. I think it works on that surface. I think it works at Roland Garros, and I think it works at the US Open as well. I think it's a beautiful thing. Good job by Craig Tiley down in Australia of thinking through that one. And I think that's innovative, and I think it's fair too. Like I said, if you don't have the momentum, you do have an opportunity to shift it in that tiebreak, and I think that's all you can ask. So there's my thought. What do you think?
I think it's good to have that versatility. Gives every event a little bit of its own thing. Obviously, it's a little bit tougher for the play, not necessarily because you're never gonna always have that type of situation to get to a fifth set or final set, and then you're right there right at the tail end of it. So, but I think it's good to have it, because it gives it a little bit. That versatility is always a good thing, and then it gives that uniqueness to every Grand Slam. So I'm all for it. I think in terms of overall excitement, I actually think the U.S. Open is the best because there's an ending right at 6-all, and I mean now we know there's an ending with all of them except for the French, but. I like it. I mean, I think it's good to have that versatility, and looking forward to seeing if it actually takes place. I think we'll see a little bit of it in Australia, especially on the men's side. So, anyhow, with that said, 2018 about to end, 2019 right on deck. Thank you so much to everybody out there for, again, following us throughout this season. Thank you to Parsa once again for doing an amazing job throughout the year, man. It's a pleasure to always do this with you for so many years, so thank you so much once again.
Thank you, Nima.
And everybody out there, make sure to continue to keep following us. You can follow Parsa at Parsa Sammy on Instagram and Twitter. Myself, I got a new handle. It's called On Mars, so you can follow me there. I got Tennis Connected, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, our website. I'm going to keep banging this up for next year. It's going to be good. Make sure to keep following us on iTunes as well, too, on Android. And lastly, for anybody looking to get down to the Australian Open, make sure to hit up Grand Slam Tennis Tours for all your ticket and traveling needs. Be good. Happy holidays.